Hello, and welcome to another episode of Waves of Change, a Great Lakes Now digital series focused on highlighting the diverse voices and perspectives shaping the environmental justice movement throughout the Great Lakes region. I'm Anna Seisling, and I'm so grateful to you for tuning in.
This program is brought to you by the Fred A. and Barbara M. Erb Family Foundation, the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, Richard C. Devereaux Foundation for Energy and Environmental Programs at Detroit PBS, Polk Family Fund, DTE Foundation, and contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Joining me today is Monica Lewis Patrick. Monica is an educator, entrepreneur, and human rights activist. She has served as Director of Community Outreach and Engagement for We the People of Detroit since 2009 and was unanimously elected to become the organization's president and CEO. She is actively engaged in the struggle for access to safe, affordable water for all under-resourced communities and is known throughout the environmental justice community as the Water Warrior. Monica, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna.
In this moment, what does environmental justice mean to you?
I have to always tell the story of Mama Rhonda Anderson, who is a legendary environmental justice advocate and activist here in Detroit, but really is known nationally for her work. And I always saw myself as a social justice person, a person fighting against improper incarceration, over policing, trying to advocate for more equity and justice in public education. And she stopped me one time and said, "Monica, you can't be a good social justice advocate without being a good environmental justice advocate." And so that really changed my perspective. And as we do more and more justice work around water, access to water, water affordability, I find myself leaning more into that environmental justice lens of making sure that every single person has access to water that is clean, safe, and affordable.
What first got you motivated to become involved in environmental justice, and when was that?
It really, for us, was in the middle of the crisis here in Detroit, where we were seeing massive shutting off of water. It had started in 2010 when we were starting to see the privatization of certain internal operations of DWSD, Detroit Water and Sewage Department. And in that process, one of the things that became very alarming for us is that if you don't have running water in Michigan for 72 hours, you can have your children taken. And that for women of color, what we know is that usually once our children get into the system, we never get them back. And so we as mothers and grandmothers and aunts and family members that have been advocating around good quality public education in Detroit, once we were made aware that women were losing their children, it was just automatic for us to get involved.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And you already mentioned Mama Rhonda Anderson. I wonder, though, this work is so relational. What is your lineage in arriving to environmental justice work? Who and what have been really formative teachers and mentors to you along the way?
Oh, in addition to the legendary Mama Rhonda Anderson, I have to call the name of the legendary, the Honorable Reverend Dr. Joanne Watson. Dr. Watson, for me, was like a second mother. She was a matriarch for the city. And she, along with the late, great Mary Ann Mahaffey and many community water warriors, formulated the first water affordability legislation in the nation. Those women were able to galvanize with community women and water advocates and then put together a strategy that is now leading the nation and framing water justice across the country. But it was rooted in an international framework around the United Nations, what we consider on a global scale, just the basic human rights for all living persons. And so to see them take that international global perspective, connect it to what was happening in terms of the harm and the disparity in water shutoffs of Detroit, and now seeing that legislation be foundational in places like Philadelphia and Baltimore and other parts of the country, and even right now on a national scale, tells us how significant those women's leadership was, not only then, but now. And so we consider ourselves part of that divine orchestrated collective thinking that has to happen, that all human beings, that all human life deserve access to water that's clean, safe, and affordable. So we have to always call the name of the Honorable Councilwoman Joanne Watson. But one of the things she told me is that you also have to call the name of the late, great Marianne Mahaffey.
So if I'm not mistaken, We the People of Detroit has recently celebrated its 15th anniversary, which is pretty awesome. And I wonder if you can reflect with me a little bit on how We the People of Detroit has evolved since those early days.
Oh, my goodness, Anna. We have grown so much. We started out as just five Black women working on justice issues such as fighting against mayoral control, when we believed that it was actually eliminating parents and families from having a say-so in public education in Detroit. Out of that, we began to work against emergency management, which we all know many of our communities are still recovering from that austerity, from that harm. And then out of that work, we have really grown as an organization from those five women to now we have 19 contractors, we have five staff persons, but we have really, really sown deeply into youth leadership development. And so over the last 9 years, we were challenged by our youth. They told us in a meeting, and I have to tell this story, we were in a meeting and all of us had our children and grandchildren and other community children with us, but the adults were meeting about water shutoffs in Detroit, the concerns we had about what was happening with water quality in Flint. And then we knew almost 7 years ago that Benton Harbor was going to experience some water quality issues. As a matter of fact, community groups and members of Benton Harbor were talking across Detroit and Flint years and years before we saw a response from our government. And so out of that, our children, one of them being mine, stood up and said, all of you adults are talking about these water issues as though it doesn't impact the children. It impacts us too. And so we sit there for a few minutes and heard stories from our children about fears that their peers had of being taken from their parents if their water was shut off. We listened to fears from children in Flint about touching water, not wanting to even put their foot in water, be it a bathtub or a lake. So being a Great Lakes state and realizing how traumatized our children had been from water, we immediately knew we had to do something to move, as Mama Gwen Winston tells us at With the People of Detroit, we had to move from trauma to transformation. And our children had been traumatized, but what we recognized, they weren't stuck there. They didn't want to stay there. And so our investments have been around really lifting the voice of our young people, sowing into their leadership and their comfort with the science of water, being a part of water testing projects. We have a phenomenal project coming up in a couple of weeks with Stanford University and UCLA, where we're going to have babies all across the city of Detroit learning the process of testing water, being engaged in that process so that we're not being victims to these kinds of disparities and inequalities, but we're actually mobilized and using our power to be solutionaries.
So you've been up to a lot over the last 15 years, that it sounds like. You know, I wonder, you mentioned, obviously, just the fact that the young people really standing up and saying, hey, we want to be involved in this. We want to have a stake. We want our voice heard. I wonder what else, or if there have been specific sort of milestones in terms of some of the issues that you all have worked on that have been really significant or especially meaningful to you over the years.
Oh, I think there's been so many. One of them that I think has been critical is the work that our youth did in 2018, as we saw over 100 schools shutting off water because of water quality issues, lead toxicity. And so out of that struggle, our babies came, and I call them babies, but they're teens. They came and said to us, they had been a part of our social justice summer program, which is now, we're super proud to say, is an all year round program. But in 2018, we were only servicing them for 4 weeks. Out of that, what they decided when they got to school and realized that water quality was an issue, one of the things is they had been exposed to the youth in Flint. So they knew what that felt like. They knew the harm that had occurred, but they also knew that the power was in them to do something about it. So they organized and attended meetings with the mayor. They went to Detroit Water and Sewage Department meetings. They went to city council meetings and voiced their concerns. And that echo chamber, that volume that they created, even though they couldn't vote, encouraged Governor Whitmer to create a task force that shifted policy that now has Michigan testing water in schools at a level that is setting the national standard. And so I often lift that because even with the inability to vote, they weren't able to vote yet. They used their voice and used their power, and it created systemic change.
So, Monica, prior to us recording this conversation today, you mentioned something to me about the Equity Legal Fellows project that you've been working on. I know this is just kind of another project that you all have sort of in the mix of all these things you're working on. Tell me a little bit about the Equity Legal Fellows project.
Oh, yes. Another exciting production coming from We the People of Detroit. We, a couple of years ago, started looking at the fact that in the Great Lakes, as we worked with groups in Toledo and Flint and Cleveland and all across the Great Lakes, many groups of color are challenged with having the proper legal expertise to help them shape legislation, litigation, even just to be able to make sure that our advocacy is moving within the framework of what we have legal rights to, sometimes can be difficult and challenging. And so we decided that we wouldn't wait on someone to come rescue us again, that we were going to deputize ourselves, use our own power. And so we partnered with some organizations at the federal level to be able to bring that expertise to bear. We also got some funding from Liquid IV, the corporation that works on water sustainability and works on water quality issues in terms of our overall physical health. And we partnered with them, and now we've been able to invest in bringing on board 3 legal fellows over the next 2 years, where we will be able to provide them financial compensation, and they will lend their legal expertise to helping us build out this fellowship in a way that's going to create, once again, critical systemic change. And one of the people we're so proud of as part of this project is our National Environmental Justice Legal Fellow, Attorney Norrell Hempel. She will be spearheading that project with us, and we just can't say enough about how proud we are of her and all that she's doing at We the People of Detroit.
So you have told me, and you already mentioned this word a minute ago, solutionaries. You've told me that We the People of Detroit, you all really try to not just point out the problems, but also to really be solutionaries within the environmental justice space. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how these different projects really embody that kind of approach. And at what point, I'm curious, did you realize, oh, it's not enough to just point out the problems. We have to really like get our imaginations around solutions to these problems.
Well, I think that for us, we've always come to this work having to be creative and innovative. Groups of color, especially African-American women-led groups, were usually underfunded, not often recognized, having a lot of challenges around sustainability because you don't have all of the funding capacity that others may have. And so we have to be creative. We have to look for ways to leverage our talents with others' talents, our skills with the skills of others. And so some of the work that we've done is we created something called the Community Research Collective, where we brought together about 67 experts and scientists and scholars, but also community experts and artists and media makers to be able to form the Community Research Collective that gave face and gave really an explanation to what was happening around water shutoffs, not only in Detroit, but how it was lending itself to water inequities across Michigan. One of the things we did was we mapped the Detroit Water and Sewage Department system, because a lot of people had difficulty wrapping their minds around how massive this system is. DWSD provides water to 40% of the entire population of Michigan. So when people were saying, we don't care that they cut off water in Detroit, those Black people ought to just pay their bills, they didn't understand that the infrastructure of Detroit is connected to their homes, to their communities as well. So this is why we must think of water holistically as a human right and something that we all must invest in. The other thing that we were able to do during the Concert of Colors several years ago when Dearborn's water was running brown, they didn't want to talk about activism and organizing because they felt like it would bring negative attention to them as an Arab community. But then when their water started running brown and they were questioning the quality of it, we were able to take our maps and translate it to Arabic and Spanish to be able to have a fuller conversation with our community. In the middle of COVID, as we were hearing from our governor and our mayor that they could not end water shutoffs, as we were being told that you had to wash your hands, you had to sanitize, we saw and we were able to demonstrate with local media that there were 23,000 households shut off from water in Detroit. We were looking at a state that Black people only make up 14% of the population, but we made up 40% of the deaths. So we took research that we had done with Dr. Nadia Gaber, that also with Professor Emily Kudel and the Community Research Collective. And thank God for leadership from our congresspersons like Debbie Dingell and Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and others. They took that research and made an appeal to the CDC so that nationally we could raise the consciousness that there is 12% of the nation suffering with the inability to just keep their water on. And so it was that kind of showing up, that kind of not waiting on anybody to tell us what we needed, but us using our voices to care enough about all humanity, not just Black folks in Detroit, but we knew the suffering was happening in West Virginia, in Kentucky, in parts of Ohio. We knew this suffering was happening to the Navajo Nation. That's why we saw so much disparity with the indigenous community, is that there is no infrastructure. So all of these things have to be part of our consciousness, part of what gets us up every day as humanity, not just Americans, but part of the global infrastructure of humanity.
Monica, Michigan is the Great Lakes state. Michigan should be leading the nation on water safety and policy. I want to ask you, are we a leader? And if we're not, what do you think is holding us back on that front?
I think that there's been a tremendous leadership coming out of Michigan on these issues. I think that we get stagnated when water becomes the geographics of water, urban versus suburban and rural. When we begin to bifurcate along political ideology, regardless of Republican, Democrat, or Independent, guess what? We all need water. And so we believe that water should be a uniter. We believe that water can be a uniter. But it's when we want to commodify water, when we want to only have a certain group control water, when we decide that we are going to regionalize water without giving proper political recognition to the very communities that built the infrastructure. I mean, when you look at the Great Lakes and just in Detroit and across Michigan, when you look at GLEWA, the Great Lakes Water Authority, and you recognize that even with the structure that's been put in place, it's a tremendous benefit to the 126 municipalities and townships that they service, but the inequity that's baked into the GLEWA agreement still creates a hardship and a lasting burden financially on Detroit. We should be receiving, according to research that came out of UCLA at the Othering and Belonging Institute, Detroit should be getting about $218 million annually for the leasing of the infrastructure that's providing water to over 3 million Michiganders. And we're only getting a portion of $50 million. We get about $33.6 million. So just that gaping disparity, that gaping hole between $33.6 million and $218 million, there would be no water shutoffs in Detroit. There would be, there wouldn't be this inequity, this huge gaping budgetary hole. But what it would also mean is that the suburban ring around Detroit would have to pay more for their water. And so it's easier to racialize the issue and continue to create the disparity for the majority Black city than it is to bring about the equity and justice that is needed for the entire portion of the state of Michigan. And so once again, we recognize that historical and spatial racism is playing out, and that is what's preventing us from moving toward equity and justice, which is a more powerful and beneficial lens for all of us.
Back in the summer of 2021, I know that there was historic and devastating flooding in Detroit. I remember it. I was also living through it, as were a whole lot of people, specifically on the city's east side. I know that this flooding affected the People of Detroit offices. And so you all got going on those being solutionaries again. And this time it was in the form of comprehensive and creative green water infrastructure. Tell me a little bit about what that project is all about.
Yes, this is another project that started out devastating. And through cooperative work and creativity, we've been able to come up with innovation once again. And so we found ourselves in the middle of COVID, locked out of our offices because of the diocese and their concern about COVID spread. But it also meant that we couldn't get to the water relief that we provide. We couldn't get to our computers, to any of the information that we needed to stay mobile during the global crisis. Well, out of that, we were able to raise a significant amount of money that allowed us to purchase a small two-family flat on the east side of Detroit. And 2 months after moving in, the backyard was underwater because of this historic flood. And what we know is that we weren't the only ones experiencing this. All of our neighbors were flooded as well. But we were one of the few that had the capacity to be able to mitigate the flooding, to make sure that it didn't get into our basement, to really stave off what could have been a major damaging and economic impact to the organization. But with that, we brought in, once again, our community research collective, those scientists, researchers, and scholars. We also partnered with Patrick Judd, who is a landscape architect. And by bringing that genius together, Patrick said, "Micah, I know we, the people of Detroit, and you're the kind of organization that doesn't want to just fix the issue for your property. You're going to want to create an impact for the entire neighborhood." And so we were able to come up with a strategy that allows us to mitigate the flooding, not only for our property, but all three properties that are adjacent to us. We have created a water catchment system that is going to capture about 10,000 gallons of water. There is a water diversion component to the project. We also have put in place, we took a 100-year-old garage and moved it, and we're able to salvage a portion of that. We are going to install solar so that it will be have a major portion of that off the grid. But the beauty of it, Anna, is that our young people are being taught about this technology, about this science, and they will be presenting and teaching other parts of our community and our city about this green stormwater information that they have learned about over the course of the next couple of weeks and months. So it's a powerful moment to be in. It means that we're not allowing things to just happen to us, but we're using our power, we're using our training, and we're creating moments that are creating systemic change. This will be a model for the neighborhood scalability of green stormwater infrastructure, which is where infrastructure has to start.
Absolutely. So, okay, kind of a perfect segue. Youth education, outreach, clearly such a crucial part of the work that you do, which leads me to something that I am so excited to ask you about, and that is the Tap Trust Project. Can you give me an overview of that project? Talk about some of the powerhouse partners that you have in the mix here. And then I kind of want to ask you a little bit specifics, but give us kind of an overview first.
Yes, well, we got reached out to about a year and a half ago by Dr. Osman with Stanford University. He's a water engineer and expert on water systems, along with Dr. Greg Pierce, who is at UCLA, Berkeley. And we began a conversation about water quality and what that looks like in Detroit. And when they first called, I said, we're good. We do water quality stuff all the time. We don't need a big project to impose on the residents of Detroit. And so Dr. Osman called back and said, "Monica, really, I think this is a great time for us to do this science. We'd love to partner with you. What would create the change?" And I said, "What would create the change for we the people of Detroit is if we could make it a youth-led water science project." And they thought about it and said, "Oh, yeah, we're in. We want that." And so we reshaped it in a way that made sure that the youth were going to be prioritized in terms of their training, their understanding of the process. They will be collaborators in rolling this project out in June. And then the other layer to this is that we realized that even with finding out the quality of water, we needed a public health component. And so this is where the amazing Amy Schultz from the University of Michigan comes in, as well as Dr. Elizabeth Mack, who has been a critical part of framing the national landscape around water affordability, water accessibility. So to have those two powerhouses joining this project to look at the public health impact of water quality and also water and affordability is going to create this win-win-win of having four major universities collaborating with this youth group of color, giving them the science, collaborating with them in terms of their creativity and how they're talking about this, how we're messaging it to the community. I think it's another game changer. And what is going to come out of this is recommendations for the Climate EJ screening tool, which is a national tool for being able to move some of the EJ concepts that many people have been working on now for a couple of generations.
You told me before that youth are willing and anxious to be the solutionaries that are bringing the science and the solutions to their communities.
Yes.
You know, I also wonder if you can speak to the ways that working with youth is actually a key way to rebuilding some of that trust in municipal water safety that has rightfully deteriorated in, you know, especially in places like Flint, Benton Harbor, Detroit. How else do you think that trust can be rebuilt? And talk a little bit about the role that youth can play in that process.
Well, what we know is that any social justice movement has been centered and led by young people. Some people forget that, especially when we start calling names like Dr. King and Ella Baker. But it was young people mobilized and galvanized and willing to take risks to really expose what these harms have looked like. And when you look at the work that has happened, and we often call the names of those great groups that we work with, when you look at in Flint, you now have a lab called the Flint Community Lab that is a youth-led concept, and it's the first youth-led water testing lab in the nation. So out of all the harm, out of all the disparity that happened in Flint and is still rolling out in Flint, you had youth that were able to knock doors and get water samples and convince elders to actually participate in these processes, whereas before they wouldn't even open the door. You had in Detroit, as we were delivering water, just the fear that people would find out that they didn't have water and remove their children, to be able to put a system in place where young people were able to communicate with one another and then therefore create collaboration to get water to people that didn't want anybody to know they didn't have water. That kind of innovation, the use of music, the use of rap and spoken word. It was our young people back in 2015, 2016, having conversations around music with young people in Cochabamba. And then out of that grew a conversation around water inequities and water disparity and privatization. And what we learned is Cochabamba and that community had fought for 16 years to take their water from private back to public. But what they also recognize is that having women govern water, and so now 60% of the governance structure over water in Cochabamba is women-led. Well, our young people thought that was super powerful and amazing, and through that knowledge, they were inspired to continue their work. That work then led to amazing productions and art pieces that created conversations with young people at colleges and universities, not just here in the States, but in Venice, Italy. And so out of those conversations, you saw it broaden. It was work that was done in the Arab Spring. It was work that was done in Ireland, work that was done in parts of Africa, where we were able to have conversations. We brought in, with our collaboration with the Methodist Church, we brought in 12 leaders from different parts of Africa and South America to talk about not only their faith, but to talk about their water disparities, but also to talk about water solutions. So it's been that collective kind of thinking. It's been research, it's been data, it's been art, it's been music, it's been science. Once we found out that 70% of African Americans don't swim, we began to create a solution for that. And so now we are getting young people of color trained to swim, and not just trained to swim, but trained as lifeguards so they can be a part of making sure we're swimming safely. So it's this kind of forward thinking. It's this kind of power driven right now moment that is creating the systemic change that we need. We don't look at what people aren't doing. We always look inward at we, the people of Detroit. What can we do? What can we be a part of in terms of moving the needle in the right direction to create greater water justice and greater environmental justice for everyone?
Thank you. You know, although your energy is so infectious, every single time I talk to you, including right now in this interview. I also know that burnout is high in the environmental justice space. And as we close things out, Monica, I wonder if you can speak to what gives you hope and what keeps you going and what keeps you energized in doing this work.
Well, I don't do it alone. I have been a part of a sisterhood of the founders, those four women. They are mentors to me. They are big sisters. They are aunties. They are grandmothers. And so they fuel me. They pour into me. They undergird me. They pray for me. But then I have mentors. I have amazing women that are pouring in from a leadership model, from a spiritual model, and then encouraging us to do more. And then I have an amazing team. Oh my God. I call them the A-team. Because they're so talented and they're so inspired by the opportunity to serve their community. And other than the founders, all of them are 40 and under. So if you look at my younger ones that are 7, 8, we call them We the People of Detroit 3.0. And then you look at that's my 4.0. Then you look at our 3.0 is like our 12 to 20-year-olds. And then our 2.0 are more of our 25 to 40-year-olds. Having that kind of creativity, having that kind of consciousness. And then the other thing is that accountability. They challenge us. They question us. They push back on things that doesn't feel good, don't feel right. They talk to us about the fact that they don't want to mimic our bad behaviors of overwork and overexhaustion. They call us out on needing to exercise better. I think the other day, Tiana, our communications director, made me have a salad where I probably would have had a burger. So it's those kinds of things. It's not just us. It's an intergenerational collaboration of ideas, of power building. As Mama Gwen talks about, it's the power of with. We're building with each other. Not opposing or against each other. There's brilliance in them. And I'm so grateful to have this opportunity. I love my city. I love humanity. I'm showing up as a Black matriarch, a mother of all civilization. And in that framework, I have a duty to serve. And so I consider myself a servant in this work. And in that service, there is some reward. It's the reward of seeing people's lives change, of seeing people inspired, seeing people moving in the direction of collective humanity building. So that's what keeps me fueled up, along with the consciousness that God has given me a very special opportunity to get up and do what I love every day. I get to serve.
Thank you. And finally, I always like to ask this question at the end of every episode of Waves of Change. You've mentioned so many beautiful individuals who are aligned with you and right alongside you doing this work. Are there any other organizations that you'd like to share out and recommend if folks want to learn more about what's going on within the EJ space in Detroit and throughout the Great Lakes?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. If you're in Ohio, check out Toledo Junction. They are doing amazing work with a project called My Joy, where they're training young folks around blue-green infrastructure and the workforce development strategies there. I've lifted up the Flint Community Lab, the first youth-led water testing lab in the nation. They're doing amazing work. If you're in Wisconsin, check out the Milwaukee Water Commons. Oh my gosh. They are not only looking at water quality, they are changing policy. They're influencing national policy. If you're in California, check out our Community Water Center. They are doing amazing work in making sure that the voices of undocumented folks and of rural communities are being brought to the table at a state and national level. They're leading around the human right to water on a legislative level nationally. If you're looking at what's happening with indigenous groups, oh my goodness, Dig Deep is hosting the U.S. WASH Conference. And then the last one I'll say, and there still are so many, is the work that is being done intersectionally, like with groups like Detroit People's Platform. I would say some of the groups that we're looking at is in Little Havos out of Chicago. That's our family. That's our people. The Midwest Environmental Justice Network. Okay, Anna, you got me started now. I can't stop. It's so many. But it's amazing groups all the time. I can give you a list. I mean, if you just want to run a list, This is what we do. This is the WITH. This is people that are across the nation that are not only building in their communities, but we have built a network of understanding, a network of skill building that's helping us all be better organizers and better leaders.
Monica, thank you. And I would gladly take a list and put it over at greatlakesnow.org so folks can check out all that good stuff along with everything that you and I have already talked about. All right, Monica Lewis Patrick of We the People of Detroit, thank you so much. It's been such an honor, such a pleasure. I'm really grateful.
Thank you, Anna. I appreciate it. You always make it fun.
Waves of Change is a production of Great Lakes Now and Detroit PBS. This digital series is produced and edited by me, Anna Seisling, with additional support from Jordan Wingrove. Great Lakes Now's executive producer is Rob Green, and Detroit PBS Vice President of Content is Ed Moore.
This program is brought to you by the Fred A. and Barbara M. Erb Family Foundation, the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, Richard C. Devereaux Foundation for Energy and Environmental Programs at Detroit PBS, Polk Family Fund, DTE Foundation, and contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.